From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of November 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Greg Johnson will help us round out our time together by discussing the agricultural cash grain markets. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse in Chicago, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today down 5¾ cents. It settled at $4.19¾. The March at $4.26, 7¾ lower. The May down 7¾ at $4.29. And December of next year, 6½ cents lower at $4.08. January soybeans down 23¼ at $11.68½. The March at $11.69½, 23¼ lower. July down 22 cents, $11.64¾ the settlement price. And next year's November down 15½ at $10.41¾. The bean oil 82 cents lower at $37.88. The bean meal down $5.40 at $3.93.10. Wheat futures soft red July at $5.88½, down 18¼. The hard red down 18½ at $5.56½. Spring wheat also down sharply between 13 and 16 cents for the afternoon. Live cattle futures in the December down 45 at $110.17½. February there at $112.87½, 37½ lower. Feeders were up $1.22½ at $141 in the nickel in the January, and the lean hogs at $67.57½, up $1.70 for the day. Crude oil down 47 cents, gasoline at $1.25. That's down 0.3 cents. And ethanol futures unchanged at $1.40 for the afternoon. Diesel fuel down 2 cents at $1.36. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to discuss the markets. Hey, good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us. Hope you're staying safe there and Normal.
Yeah, we're low-key. We've been very fortunate thus far. A lot of this COVID, as you know, has been circulating around. So hope everyone stays safe and stays healthy and be able to enjoy the next holiday, which is Christmas, rapidly approaching, man.
Yeah, it doesn't take long to get from Thanksgiving to Christmas, and hopefully we will be able to avoid what Dr. Fauci called that surge on a surge between then and now. That would not be good. However, let's talk about other things that are not good for the day. Soybeans down 23 cents, sharply lower. I take it this is about a change in pattern, or at least maybe a little rainfall, mostly in Brazil.
Well, hopefully we've not lost my streak here. Mondays have been green, now we're red, so maybe we can get a turnaround Tuesday here and reverse this a little bit. But no, a little better chance of some moisture in the southern hemisphere, but a lot of it's not supposed to materialize for another week yet, and they're still concerned about 35% of the growing region in the southern hemisphere, so the forecast is going to be on, off, on, off. Probably the other things to look at too, it's a full moon, so I don't know if we had a full moon high or looking for a full moon low, so we'll sort that out as we go through the next few days. But today's end of the month, commodity funds were heavy sellers today. They sold about 7,500 contracts of corn, about 9,000 contracts of beans, about 5,000 contracts of wheat as we went into that 11 o'clock hour, and I'm sure it's going to be a little higher than that. The key is to watch the open interest, see if it dropped on this break to see if there was some long liquidation or not. When you look at the price action, we did not poke out $12 in the futures, and that was kind of a benchmark we needed to move through. We consolidated there for about a week and a half, and now we kind of broke out to the downside here. We had an outside down day. We did not make a new contract high and close below the previous low to really record what I call a key price reversal. So it's turned the momentum indicators down and through here. We've got some bearish trend divergences. So failure to get back above the lows we made last week will signal that maybe we can see a little bit more of a significant correction to the downside that we've not seen for quite some time. One other fundamental event is on the bean side, two fundamental events, that is. One is we've not seen any new daily sales pop up on bean sales to China. They've been absent for a while. They've probably booked enough here and probably laying low here, waiting for a break like this to maybe piece in a few cargoes as we move into late springtime window. The other thing, too, is the world vegetable oil market, Malaysia palm oil and so forth. We've seen a correction in that market. And that market spilled over into the U.S. soybean oil market, with soybean oil down 92 cents on the day. On the corn side, if you look at the July on back, July, December, that does classify as a key price reversal to the downside. Made a new contract high for the move, closed below the previous day's low. So that does signal some topping action in through here. Even the new crop December 21 corn sort of sticks out as a sore thumb. And I would probably view last night's highs as kind of a resistance level or benchmark to try to overcome if we're going to resume this trend to the upside. Market was a little higher on overnight trade due just to the fact we did not see any deliveries on the corn or even Chicago wheat, as a matter of fact. Then as we got into the early trade, there was some sales announced, 140,000 ton and another 204,000 ton corn being sold to unknown destination. And that might have been why the market was a little firmer there overnight, Todd.
I'm going to ask you a little bit of a point-blank thing here. You may not want to answer completely, but yeah, on beans in particular, because for January, we're at $11.68.5 on the settlement today. That's well above the $8 we started at back in August. Most folks have got a lot of beans sold, maybe 15% left to sell. Any reason not at all to go ahead and finish making those sales?
Well, that's a great question. I think you got to kind of weigh the options here. Some might want to hold that until we get into the growing season, see if we have the acres, see if we have the weather. From a bookkeeping point of view or a risk point of view, if you hang on to them, I'd buy a cheap put option to protect the downside here in case this thing fully retraces a dollar or so for some unknown reason. But a lot of guys have moved the beans, then done some type of replacement strategy. That way you've got your cash in your pocket here. You got a little ownership for down the road here in case the southern hemisphere continues to see some dry weather concerns. Or those beans do not come out of the southern hemisphere in a timely fashion. But $11, $12 beans, that's kind of a windfall. I think you ring the cash register and move on to 2021 myself.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Researchers are putting a new twist on a very old soil conservation practice. Dry dams are becoming what's called a WASCOB. WASCOB stands for Water and Sediment Control Basin. It's an updated version of a dry dam. Now, those have been used forever to slow soil erosion. The WASCOB adds nutrient runoff to that list by holding water in place behind the dam for a longer duration, says Southern Illinois University scientist John Schoonover. He's been working on a series of WASCOBs in Menard County, Illinois.
Each one of these are equipped with control structure where we can monitor the discharge and we can also monitor the stage within each one of those basins. The ones without WASCOBs have partial flumes at the end, so we can also do a comparison of that water coming out of the outlet, so how much drainage we're getting through these basins. The basins are retaining water about 12 hours on average, I'd say. So they're holding water back for a little while, and that's allowing for some processing going on. So we're seeing DRP concentrations, or dissolved reactive phosphorus concentrations, about half of what we're seeing in the non-WASCOB watershed. So there is some microbial processing going on. TSS is settling out. We have some denitrification probably occurring in those watersheds as well, because we're seeing lower nitrate concentrations in those outlets compared to the upper basins.
And dry dams are dry until it rains, and they can be farmed through and over. They act as a detention basin holding water. There's a tile line beneath the detention basin and a tile riser for larger events. The tile is generally best used to control nutrient runoff if it dumps into another nutrient control structure. A grass buffer zone is a good example. Now, if you'd like to learn more about WASCOBS and other nutrient loss reduction practices, then check out the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast online. Just search Google for Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Hey, won't you join the 1,200 that have already pre-registered for tomorrow's Illinois Farm Economics Summits? It's actually the first in 5 one-hour webinars. They run tomorrow starting at 11 o'clock for an hour, and then on Friday, the following Tuesday, the next Friday, and then Tuesday, December the 15th, we'll wrap things up. There are 5 of them with the Agricultural Economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. As usual with the Illinois Farm Economics Summits, I'll be your moderator, but you'll take questions and answers on the webinar. You can sign up. It's just there online for free. That's right, free. Check it out at willag.org. Scroll down until you find IFAS, the Illinois Farm Economics Summit. You'll find all the details there. Well, actually, in the link there that goes to the Farm Doc Daily website, or you can go straight there as well, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Just 1 hour at 11 o'clock Central Time on Tuesday, Friday, and Tuesday. Don't miss it. This is the webinar to kick off your winter meeting season. On this Monday, let's check the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving with your family. Mark, I know my wife and I were home, and we did just perfectly fine for the day and talked to all the kids, too. So it was a good Thanksgiving for us. Hope yours was as well.
Yeah, it certainly was. Just at home with the family, but all in all, a very nice Thanksgiving.
Tell me about the weather forecast in Brazil, Argentina. Brazil in particular, because I think it's a nice weather forecast, or nicer for them. Maybe not so much if you're wanting the price of soybeans to go higher, but it looks like they're going to get a little bit of rainfall maybe.
Yeah, in fact, portions of southern Brazil have already started to see rain activity over the long holiday weekend as rain activity from Argentina has pushed into that region. And that's really going to be the theme this week with southern Brazil from Rio Grande do Sul, Santa Catarina, and Paraná. That is the most active zone within Brazil over the next 7 days. So additional improvement there in soil moisture across southern Brazil. And then into next week, those rains begin to shift northward into the northern belt. And then it's far southern Brazil that will begin to shift drier, meaning Rio Grande do Sul will begin to shift back into a drier mode next week. But for northern Brazil, while this week is dry, again, they have their opportunity for some improvement next week.
Improvement, but will it be enough? And I guess I'm wondering how much rainfall and by comparison, how much to what they normally would get on a daily basis?
Yeah, across northern Brazil, we're reaching, you know, climatologically the peak of the rainy season as we go into December and then on into January and February. So for a 7-day time frame for early December across northern Brazil and places like Mato Grosso, they usually pick up about 2 to 3 inches of rain per week or per 7 days. So right now it's looking like around 75% of the northern belt will see those types of amounts next week. So it does look like more of a normal type of week, but as much of a deficit that's already in place, it's still a far cry from improving this, you know, very significant precip deficit that's grown since October 1st.
Southern Brazil into Argentina, what are conditions like across those areas?
Up to this point in the season, again, they've been very dry, especially in southern Brazil. Southern Brazil is improving here this week, but by the end of this week, especially Rio Grande do Sul, will shift distinctly into a drier mode. And Argentina is part of that drier mode as well. So again, they're in this window of improvement right now, but then turning drier late this week and on into next week, the longevity of this drier mode is something that, you know, has to be watched here. How long it lasts, you know, later in December or even beyond.
Here in the United States, we celebrated the Thanksgiving holiday. In my part of the world, it was a great weekend. And then things cooled off pretty quickly. Can you tell me about the forecast for the upcoming week?
Yeah, for this week in particular, temperatures across much of the Midwest will be generally near normal. Again, a lot of temperature variability, a big change from the ultra warmth that's been in place most weeks here in November. So a bit of a change there is for temperatures, but still no sign of any big time Arctic air moving into the Midwest, whether that's this week or even looking out into next week as well.
And in the hard red winter growing regions of the United States, they were dry. Do they remain so?
We do see an overall lack of precipitation across the Plains hard red belt as we go through this week. And again, there are areas within western Kansas, eastern Colorado that have not improved in recent weeks, while other portions of the Plains hard red belt have improved. And so all in all, the pattern for the next few weeks features really no major storms and a lot of variable temperatures.
We turn to the month of December. Is it too soon to start talking about snow cover and concerns?
Still a little bit too soon here. Well, a lot of that is just due to the pattern, which features this lack of Arctic air throughout the first half of December. But as is always the case, later in December and into more January and February, that's when climatologically the risk of more significant cold can work its way into the hard red belt. And with currently a lack of any kind of significant snow, that's something that, as always, needs to be monitored.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd. Thanks for having me.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Greg Johnson is now here from the Andersons, from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate that.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd. Yes. Wish I had better news, but we'll take what we get, right?
Yeah, we will. We will. And by that, you mean it's a down day in Chicago. But I have a different question to start out with. A listener wrote me on Twitter. And because I don't go to campus, I don't run by the Andersons like I normally would on a regular basis. He wanted to know how much grain you had stored on the ground this year outside of the elevator. And frankly, I must have been thinking about a whole bunch of other things when I have gone by, because I don't recall seeing the piles and how big I thought they were.
We put a big invisibility cloak over our pile this year. No, we did not put any corn on the ground. The pipeline going into fall harvest was extremely tight, extremely small, and so train values were extremely well. In fact, at some points, we could sell fall trains for the exact same price that we could sell January, February, March trains. And so if the market's not going to pay us to store corn, we're not going to store corn. We're going to sell it and move it into the pipeline. And that's exactly what we did, and other elevators did that as well. So a lot of farmers said the same thing. You know, they said, why didn't you have piles on the ground? Was the crop that bad? And the answer is no. I think we had 200 bushel corn. It wasn't a great crop, but it was a slightly above average crop. But the problem, not the problem, but the answer is the demand side of the equation was there, that such that we could sell corn that at basically the same price as January corn. And so we took advantage of that and sent a lot of corn into the pipeline.
So this would be the time of year you'd be really working hard now to get that picked up between Thanksgiving and Christmas, if I remember correctly from my discussions with Brian Stark, the manager there. Does that bring you up short because you don't have those piles on the ground to pull from?
Well, it's, you know, Rob and Peter to pay Paul. We normally don't sell multiple trains in the fall, and this year we did. So we're already ahead of schedule there. But now you're right. Now we won't have the corn to pick up and sell trains for that December, January, February timeframe like we normally do. So we sold more October, November trains. We're going to sell less December and January trains. I think it all still works out about the same, maybe a little bit less. Like I say, I think we're going to average 205 bushels here in Champaign County, better than last year's 187, but certainly not anywhere close to the 220, 225 that we've seen in previous years.
So demand relatively robust, but kind of the same given you had a front-loaded dispatch of corn.
Yes, front-end loaded demand and a lack of farmer selling, interest in farmer selling. You know, the farmers sold a lot of soybeans when they hit $9 and $10 and $11, and then they've got some government payments as well. So quite frankly, the farmers really didn't need to sell corn to generate cash flow needs. You know, you could argue maybe they should be selling corn because the price is good, but they didn't need to sell corn. And so as a result, farmers have been a little bit slower on the trigger to market their corn. So far, sitting to see and wait back has been the right strategy. That won't work forever, but so far, waiting and being a little patient on the trigger on corn has been the right thing to do.
Being patient and waiting on soybeans still probably could pay off. Given we started in the $8 range, I'm sure that's the case. But rain, not on the plain in Spain, but in Mato Grosso, has done a number in Chicago today on the soybeans. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, the market trades every day, and the days and the weeks when they don't get much rain down in South America, we have a rally, and we've rallied over $2.25, almost $2.50. But we have to expect on days when they do put rain in the forecast, where it does rain, the market is going to go back down. Now, I try to keep a big picture perspective. December and January are the critical months. That's the pod filling, pod setting stage down there for a big chunk of of Brazil and Argentina. So I equate that to our July and August. And right now it's June down there, basically. So, you know, they don't need a lot of rain. They need some rain to keep the crop growing. But the critical months for them are going to be December and January. So the question is, you know, is this a change in the pattern? Or is this just a rain that, you know, even in a dry year, you know, we get rain and they get rain, you know, but just not enough. So is this a change in the pattern? Or is this just a one rain event and they go back to a dry pattern? That's the question.
It appears in Chicago that the weakest link for the day actually was the wheat. Was there something happening there that caused that problem?
I haven't heard of anything other than wheat. If you look at the supply and demand tables, the supply demand carry out stocks use ratio for corn is 5% for soybeans it's 5%, for corn it's 10%, for wheat it's 30 to 40%. So there's still a lot of leftover wheat. So that's the one anchor that we kind of weighs on this market. We have to get rid of a lot more of our old crop wheat before the market really will get excited like they have with the corn and the soybeans.
Hey, thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.